from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Actually watching Carl Sagan's Cosmos while high, and I decided that we need to talk about science a bit. But it was the good kind of high, not necessarily the one where I was stupefied and retarded from my observations, but rather was able to see in a new way and a new insight the wonder of Carl Sagan, who makes a lot more sense when you actually smoke a little bit of weed. It's the way he moves, actually. I think I just realized. Everybody always told me he's just always high, and now I realize he really was.
What, the way he moves? What, does he have, like, little shiny trinkets
I
on
can't
his
even,
wrists?
The something? Way he talks and moves his hands like this all the time. It's just kind of freaky, actually. And what's really interesting is when you watch it, too, like the music is kind of strange, because the whole time the Cosmos series is him in this imaginary ship who goes, you know, from place to place in the universe. The ship looks terrible, but it just looks like a dandelion.
I never watched Cosmos. I didn't feel it was right because I never gave any money to PBS. So.
I bought the book and I read the book, but it's different to see it, actually. Mm-hmm. It's quite funny too to watch. I mean, it's dated. Mm-hmm. Like they'll show street, you know, like parts where people are walking the street and listening to headphones is so ginormous.
They had headphones back then?
Well, headphones had plugged into, you know, like, you remember those old gray headphones that we had at school? You know, those massive things? Like, anyways, that's the kind of headphones they had back then. And you know, computing machines, like IBM machines, punch card kind of things that everybody's, like, working on. You're like, this is hilarious.
And now look at us. We got tiny headphones and a completely collapsed economy. Those people from the 70s were so stupid.
They're so stupid. Now, you wanted to talk a little bit about the debate, the Obama-McCain debate.
Well, I just wanted to... There's been a narrative going around, and I know a lot of people have been freaked out about this, because with the elections and everything like that, everyone was saying that everything's getting religionicized, if that's at all...
Religionicized.
If that's even close to being a word. I know it's not, but if you can understand what I'm trying to say...
It's like putting religion and supersized together.
But what was mentioned is the fact that religion and God didn't come up once during the last debate. But I was kind of thinking that that's not really true, because when you've got a whole bunch of mandates, say like what McCain has on abortion, his opinion on abortion is a religious...
Stance.
So even if you're not saying God, it's like when people are like, well, if you don't say God, but you bring up that you're against stem cell research, you're stupid, and that is a religious issue. And the fact that it's this whole idea of how people are hiding behind these ideas that people don't even kind of explain as being a religious issue, or say, like, there's lots of racist issues and sexist issues and homophobic issues.
Which boiled down to religious issues at the end of the day.
Right? Yeah, I mean, look at, say, like Prop 8 in California, where they're saying vote no on Prop 8. But it's interesting, there's a whole bunch of Democrats that are supporting the no on Prop 8, but they don't mention homosexuality. They're just like, they completely gloss over what it's all about. They're just like, it's wrong, so vote no. And they're hoping to trick people, and I'm just like, man, talk about a bunch of spineless cowards.
I guess, you know, it's the scary part where the dialogue that religion creates has now been, like, so overworked that we don't even need to mention the fact that it is religious but in nature. Mm. So it's just, you know, like you're saying, the narrative's changed, but it's changed so much that we now accept, or the majority of people accept that these things are true because the religion or the religious overview has taken this agreement. Mm-hmm. That, like, well, homosexuality is wrong. Yeah, well, somebody would be like, well, why? Well, you know, it's been proven wrong. Mm-hmm. And then if you boil it down all of a sudden, you know, to this constituent element, you're like, oh, because, you know, the Bible says so. Yeah. Oh, I see.
And that's kind of scary that the narrative's being set to that point where they don't even have to bring up God to be discussing all of these ridiculous religious topics and having these stances that boil down to that. And I just thought I'd bring that up. And that was, you know, you were asking me, have anything you want to get off your chest? And that, to me, was just something that I wanted to get off, where I was like, it's still all about it. I kind of like that they're not shoving down our throats that God this and God that and Jesus and my faith, but it's still very much out there, and it's very much out there. I don't care about that. They could be like, I love Jesus from now until the
rapture.
Until the rapture. I don't care. But when they're talking about the issues are what I care about. So when someone's like, I'm anti-abortion, because I'm totally pro-abortion.
he loves it. We had a show about how much he loves it.
And stuff like that. It just drives me nuts, because that is the side of religion that I don't like, is when it's messing with my beliefs and the general beliefs and the general morality of the population.
Well, that's I kind of discussed a similar thing in one of the articles that I put up, which was about a speaker who was supposed to go to the New Brunswick and give a speech about his book called Rainbow Boys, mm-hmm. about, you know, growing up gay and as a teen. But the whole thing, like the part that pissed me off, is they canceled his speaking arrangement because some of the parents, some, not all, but some of the parents complained, saying, "Oh, I don't think these kids can handle this kind of speech," and blah blah blah. But all of this was just hiding their own homophobia, mm-hmm. and trying to say, "Well, I don't think these kids should be exposed to these kinds of things." Brr, like as if, yeah, somebody in high school's never heard of that or whatever. And it's going to be so traumatized by hearing an honest account of a man's sexual identity crisis. Yes, no one can handle something so horrible. Mm-hmm. And the part that I felt was so crappy.
I prefer teenagers to deal with that kind of crisis
through suicide.
The way they used to do it, the good old-fashioned way, by blowing the brains out.
Yep, blowing their fucking brains
out. And feeling
out.
Completely alone and isolated, like no one has ever gone through what they've gone through.
Yep. Well, that's exactly what a lot of them are probably going to go through, because, you know, if it follows with the same percentages of people that are gay in the school like they are everywhere else, there'll be plenty of confused people that could have probably used a good speech.
A little side story here. This is a fun little thing for you listeners. You can tell your friends about this too. It's just a fun tidbit. There was one of those web blocking applications and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That keep you from looking at all the fun sites on the internet.
Yeah.
It turns out that a whole bunch of them have banned a lot of the homosexual teenage crisis websites and stuff like that.
Ouch.
I'm like, yeah.
Wow. Yep. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. What did you think was on those sites? Gay porn?
I'm sure it's all keyword-based and everything like that. Like, people think, you're so evil. No, just incompetence. Incompetence, really, you know, most of the things that we consider evil are just incompetence, where people are just like, well, let's just block everything that someone says fag or homo or something like that. It's just bad.
Anyways, the two parts that I wanted to talk about, I guess we're going to start with the Obama part.
The Obama part of science?
No, of the... the Obama part of science.
The science of Obama.
The science of Obama. Is the fact that Obama has been endorsed by essentially every Nobel laureate that's alive, because obviously being endorsed by the dead ones is kind of freaky.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had that episode where we had those people that were basically taking away their... What was it? They had that order of... Who was it? There was the church, and the guy gave up his order of whatever.
Oh, right. There was the deceased woman whose foundation gave back the Order of Canada.
There you go. So it would be that kind of thing.
Posthumously, I return it to you.
Posthumously, we give you this nomination. It's like how everybody was battling over the nominations of Johnny Cash and all those other guys. These country guys were saying, yeah, if Johnny Cash were alive, he'd vote for McCain. And Johnny Cash's daughter or granddaughter was like, no, he wouldn't. He really wouldn't.
Okay, now here's the quote. They send a letter basically endorsing him. And the letter, I'm going to read not all of the letter, but the parts that I thought were interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about it. Okay, here he goes. During the administration of George W. Bush, vital parts of our country's scientific enterprise have been damaged by stagnant or declining federal support. The government's scientific advisory process has been distorted by political consideration. As a result, our once dominant position in the scientific world has been shaken, and our prosperity has been placed at risk. We have lost time critical for the development of new ways to provide energy, treat disease, reverse climate change, strengthen our economy, and improve our security. We have watched Senator Obama's approach to these issues with admiration. We especially applaud his emphasis during the campaign on the power of science and technology to enhance our nation's competitiveness. In particular, we support the measures he plans to take through new initiatives in education and training, expanding research funding, an unbiased process of obtaining scientific advice, and an appropriate balance of basic and applied research to meet the needs of the world's most urgent to meet the nation's and the world's most urgent needs. And it was quite a lengthy list. I don't have the exact number with me, but it was it looked like it was every single one of them that are possibly alive. Now, my question to you is that...
To me?
Does that change anyone's mind? Is there anyone who's like, I think McCabe's all right, and sees this letter and is like, shit, I better change.
Well, you got to understand that there are a lot of people out there who were for McCain who are now going for Obama because they just don't feel that McCain has what it takes to fix the economy. And... you know, part of that is because they feel that McCain is just going to keep us bogged down in wars. But another part of that is in just in the fact that he's old-fashioned. And he obviously...
he doesn't know how a computer works. That's good.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Scary!
Stuff like that just kind of turns people over. So, I mean, this is just another you know, it's another straw. And is it the one that breaks the camel's back? You know, for a lot of these idiotic, undecided voters, but or even just... Here's the thing. People look at undecided voters like they're the last people left, but McCain is losing votes and Obama's going up. So where are these coming from? The undecided is still undecided. So he's picking up votes from people who normally vote Republican. So that kind of tells you something. And I figure there are people out there who are looking at the situation and going, we do need to invest more in education because the kids are getting stupid.
They are getting pretty stupid.
And, you know, we need to, you know, we're losing to, like, the Koreans in the science game. And that's ridiculous. How is it that they are beating us in certain areas of science? It boggles the mind. So,
I always, here's an interesting parallel. Imagine that rather than 50 Nobel laureates, it was 50 reality TV stars that had sent a letter endorsing Obama.
It would get more press.
Do you think it would get more people? Like, my question is this, because it used to be, I mean, this is, you know, we're talking here, you know, the 1930s or whatever, where, you know, you were a Nobel laureate and you were a fucking superstar,
yeah.
Right? But now you win, and
nobody
knows who you are. I mean, do we really know who the smartest man on Earth right now is considered to be? I don't even know.
But we know the one with the biggest penis.
We do,
and we know the one who gets paid the most per TV episode.
We also know the one that has been paid the most for a movie, which is now Johnny Depp, who's being paid like $45 million for, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
There's going to be a number 4?
There's being a 4.
Oh, that's a mistake.
I know, that's a mistake. Anyways, let's not get off track on that.
Proof
piece
that
of
there
shit.
Is no God. Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Oh, dear God. Anyways,
a fourth movie based on a ride at Disney World.
I think that, you know, the erosion of say, science has a lot to do with kind of like our like the fact that we don't even admire people who pursue their entire lives for it. We assume that most of these people are driven by the same thing that drives, say, a person who starts his own company, right? They're motivated entirely by profit, and that none of these people study science for the pure love of science. I think it's that's where a lot of mistrust comes from, where we just assume that these are just corporate whores now, and they don't do it for the betterment of mankind. Like, there's just suddenly this feeling that, you know, that whole, wow, you know, here's a person who devotes their life to knowledge. Like, we don't care anymore.
Well, you got to understand. I mean, look at the context of our society right now, where a lot of the things that you attribute science to are large corporations. And if you've seen the miniseries The Corporation, you will understand that corporations are basically psychotic. And they chew people up and spit them out. So, of course, there's a distrust for science because you got pharmaceutical companies that don't care if people live or die, and you've got these technological companies that are just you know, they're just suppressing technology to keep their existing business models in play. So there's all sorts of situations where not on an individual standard. I mean, you got individual scientists who are doing stuff, but there's also the problem where you no longer have these singular guys. You don't have a Marie Curie doing everything. You now have these gigantic teams, you know, and it's spread out over 6 universities and 100 guys. So how are you supposed to say, go team? We don't have, like, the, you know, the Harvard, give them some,
you know,
stupid,
I think,
sports team name.
I think you just gave me a goddamn good idea. We need to, like, fuck wearing, like, a Canadian's jersey or whatever, or hockey team. Fuck that noise. We need to have,
like, Springfield Adams.
Exactly. Really, that spirit of admiration, competition that I think most sports athletes are really undeserving of.
But, I mean, people don't even understand what's happening anymore. And there was another thing that I read just recently about the fact that because the competition for government grants is getting so difficult, you've got scientists that are inflating their theories and their paperwork and stuff like that and giving it in to try and get these grants. And they're releasing, you know, those stupid statements on BBC where it's like, oh, asparagus causes cancer and this does this and this will make you fat and this will make you skinny and this will kill you. And it's all these ridiculous claims that are being made by these groups in an attempt to get attention, to get funding for further studies. And how can people take that kind of, you know, that is a big part of the erosion. So you can't just blame society. You got to blame the way that science is kind of progressing.
I don't know. You know
itself.
What? I think it has a because lot
of,
to do.
Because
no,
of capitalism.
No, I think that maybe the biggest issue is the fact that, you know, before the public was educated enough that you could explain to them what somebody was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not so much.
I disagree. I don't think people are significantly dumber than they used to be. I just think that they're more coddled and that there's no longer an avenue for people to get this kind
but
of
that's,
information.
But that leads to the same thing. If you're coddled, right, mm-hmm. say you are inherently ignorant about something, but I'm going to coddle your opinion and say, well, you deserve your opinion, even though you are completely retarded about mm-hmm. a subject. Then that coddling leads to the same thing. Your stupidity.
I'm saying, where's the filter? Back in the day, you'd have a reliable filter, a reliable news group that you would trust. That would say,
you're blaming news.
I'm blaming the media. I'm blaming the media in general.
We are the media, though. We are media now.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So you're blaming mainstream media?
No, I'm just blaming overall. I mean, it's a general problem with everybody, you know.
So what do we do?
Hmm?
What do we do, Ryan?
We need people to take their heads out of their asses and stop peddling bullshit. But how are you supposed to do that? Because not like these media people know what's true and what isn't. They have to trust the scientists. So again, it goes back to the fact that these scientists have to stop jerking off for grant money.
Well, it's tough to not jerk off for grant money when they give you so little.
Yeah, I know.
The circle of life.
Yeah, it's not going down a good path.
Now, here's another interesting science bit. Now, you probably didn't hear about this, but Miller experiments?
I hear a lot more.
Have you heard about the Miller experiments? The attempts to recreate the early atmosphere to see how they could how life may have arisen.
Is it kind of going towards the idea of terraforming planets?
No.
Boring.
I really likes me science terraforming science.
I like Total Recall.
Yeah, I don't think that was a really scientifically accurate movie. I like how the atmosphere just suddenly appeared in a matter of seconds, where it would probably take a lot longer for that shit to
really maybe populate. If it was directed by Al Gore, it would be boring and realistic.
Okay, fine, it's a movie. But here's basically Stanley Miller in the 1953 experiment. Basically what he did was he took what he thought were the primordial atmosphere of early Earth, which comprised of ammonia, water vapor, methane, and hydrogen.
Sounds smelly.
And then basically he put he charged it with electrical sparks, mm-hmm. kind of like the early lightning that you would have on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And basically his experiments found that even only after a short time, complex organic amino acids were created from from these experiments. Now, what happened is that they were largely disregarded for a long time. The reason being that as we understood more about the early Earth's atmosphere, they kind of realized that it didn't match the proportions that he was talking about. So they kind of ignored it. And there it sat until very recently, where they've been re-examining it, because now rather than it being a model for how the early Earth's atmosphere was like, it's mm-hmm. actually a model for how when volcanoes die out,
mm-hmm.
Oftentimes like they'll the craters will leave sort of like this this soup,
mm-hmm.
You know, that resembles exactly the proportions that he was talking about, and they think that these reservoirs were actually the place where, or this primordial soup may have actually begun.
So the origin of life.
Yeah. So this is basically a science of the origin of life, which is very tricky,
mm-hmm.
because really what you're trying to do is you're just trying to determine not necessarily how DNA came together, because that's just, you don't have that kind of time to in an experiment. It could take like millions of years. Who fucking knows?
Mm-hmm.
But what they're really trying to do is figure out how easy is it for complex organic molecules to form and to replicate themselves, because that's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you have an organic molecule that's able to replicate itself, that is your answer. It's not the super satisfying answer of how DNA came to be, because mm-hmm. that's a very specific type. And maybe on other planets, that's not how organic life develops. But
just to ask you a question from the religious point of view.
Sure.
Is no one, but the religious people don't even go down to that DNA point. Do they? Like, well, you don't know how the DNA gets formed, so God did it. God did it. But they don't go that far, do they?
You know what?
This whole primordial soup idea is not even kosher to them, right?
It's not very comfortable. It's not a very comfortable idea because, you know, it's like, you ever heard those guys like, I don't descend from no rock? Which, I don't know, rock is inorganic, so yeah, I guess you didn't. But what people don't really want to admit to themselves is, you know, like when they're talking about the origin of life, that's where all of these really religious people can kind of go back. Even if they believe in evolution, they can always use this and saying, some divine hand, some divine spark got it all started.
That whole something from nothing argument?
Pretty much, it's like the ontological argument. So, you know, something had to create this. And now, I mean, those experiments, like at first, they were very controversial because they showed, well, maybe that's not necessary. And now, if those models are correct, it could really be fairly exciting. And what's really cool, too, is that they were actually analyzing the samples from the 1953 experiments, and they found amino acids that he wasn't even really aware of because they had no way of really testing it accurately.
Yeah.
So there were dozens, I think in total almost 30 different types of amino acids, and that was just from a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can imagine this kind of thing over the span of many, many millions of years. I mean, is it so hard for us to believe now that something like DNA or RNA or whatever is our precursor could begin in sort of like these fertile soupy areas? And I think it's really kind of exciting if you think about it, that we can move back. Here's an experiment done in 1953. People were like, it's no good, but we're revisiting and saying, shit, this was actually a pretty damn good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else can we learn from it? Because even if it wasn't true for early Earth, there are probably out there atmospheres that are made of those kinds of elements. And, you know, how easy is it for life outside of Earth to be started?
I always found it funny how, you know how the scientists are always saying, well, the chances of there being another planet out there that can sustain life. And now, of course, we're finding out, hey, look, Mars has ice, and it might be raining or snowing over there, too. It's like, congratulations, science, on just being like, no, not possible. And I'm like, don't think of like life as saying, oh, you know, humans couldn't exist. I'm just thinking like microbes and bacteria and
The whole thing that was interesting, especially about the documentary Cosmos, was where he was talking about, Carl Sagan argued that life is probably very prolific, at least in the level of very, very simple, you know, self-replicating organic molecules,
mm-hmm.
the very basics of what we would say is organic life.
Mm-hmm.
But he says it's probably a lot more rare for larger creatures to come about. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the history of life for the majority of the time, it's just, you know, this very boring, you know, not even a cell kind of like creature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then at, you know, a particular time, I think it's like 500 million years ago, Cambrian explosion. And of course, everybody's like, ooh, that must have mean things happened over really suddenly. No, it just means that there was a proliferation of different kinds of life.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have this just one kind and it's everywhere. And then all of a sudden you begin to see differences, like as if there was a switch, as if there was a unique series of circumstances
as
that led to it.
Some kind of ethereal spirit or
some ether,
some godlike creature had just done something.
Something amazing.
Flipped a switch.
Flipped a damn switch that initiated the creativity of all life. No, basically, I mean, you can kind of understand, we don't know what those factors are yet.
God.
Right. That would be a very uninteresting proposition to stop it there, eh?
You don't know. You can't deny that it could be God.
You can't disprove a negative. Yeah.
Exactly. You don't even know what you're talking about, buddy.
I felt the Holy Spirit, so in your face.
Isn't it fun how I'm able to represent that ignorant kind of
attitude? You have a deep within you.
I have a deep understanding of how to do it.
You know what? I actually, the way that I wanted to end this show, it actually has to do with the last thing that we talked about, where you said that I was completely wrong and out of my tree about saying that people shouldn't identify themselves with
the religion that they grew up in.
And so far, I have to say, of the responses, there were about 10, only one person agreed with you. So I thought you should know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you want to expound on that?
Yeah, you know what? I think I realize now what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The person that did agree with you was religious at some point. they identified themselves that way when they were adults, mm-hmm. and only came to the conclusion of, say, atheism or even agnosticism later on in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So for that person, the one that agreed with you, the reason they identify with that is because they were part of that identity. It wasn't forced on them. They weren't just born into it. They mm-hmm. had chosen it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that person agreed. But everybody else who had been born into
Everybody else who doesn't ever want to identify themselves with religion because they're angry atheists.
Oh, now that's an unfair accusation.
What are you talking about? I think it's completely fair.
I'm not convinced at all that most of our listeners are very angry atheists themselves. The angry atheists tend to hate this show. You know why? Because they're like, you guys are factually incorrect sometimes. I hate you.
You guys don't expound into every single scientific whatever. I admit I'm an idiot.
We have very friendly. No, but I don't want to disregard your argument because I think that it is partially valid. I think that there are people that do identify, but it's the same thing that Richard Dawkins was talking about. That if your parents were, you know, Republicans or liberals, it doesn't mean that you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your political decisions, your political life is decided by you as an adult, not you as a child. Mm-hmm. And if you can't decide, then you aren't part of that. Your heritage is made up of that, but that mm-hmm. doesn't identify you as a person. It only identifies your history the same kind of way that I descended from you know, apes mm-hmm. defines me as a person, but it doesn't tell you who I am or what I believe. It just tells you what my background was, what my heritage was.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, I mean, looking at a political party and a political situation, when you're talking about religion, especially with a lot of other people, for me it was just I spent, you know, half of one day a week at church. So that was all the influence it was for me. But all these other people who grew up in religious families where religion, you know, lots of people, it's a big part of their lives. So a lot of people growing up, it's going to be a huge aspect of their lives. I've got friends... We had neighbors, and I used to babysit their kids, and their kids are now like 17 or 18 or something like that, and they've rebelled, and they've completely dropped out of their parents' religion. And these kids are hard. The parents were hardcore. I don't know what denomination, but they were hardcore. But those kids there, they lived. Everything about their lives was about the religion that they came from. So to leave, they identify because with what they were. Because that defines everything about how they grew up. They were homeschooled. They'd go on these crazy retreats and everything else like that.
Were they cultists?
Hmm? They weren't. It wasn't a cult, but it was definitely a very traditional.
I like how you made the flub, the verbal flub of calling it a domination rather than denomination.
Hmm?
I thought it was a domination.
I did enjoy that.
I thought that it was quite telling.
These were the kind of people who would be like who would say that they would. What was it? Spare the rod, spoil the child, which means that you actually beat on them. Because if you're sparing the rod, you are spoiling the child.
No,
what the saying means.
I thought it was encouraging spoiling children.
No, actually, it's if you spare the rod, then you're spoiling the child.
I see.
I actually understood that completely wrong.
I thought they were like, spare the rod, buddy. Just get rid of it. Spoil the child. Do it.
Because I actually learned from them because they were saying that that's how they raised their kid. I'm like, well, that's good. And they're like, and that's why I hit them regularly. And I'm like, what the hell?
So you're supposed to spoil the child. Spoil him with rod beatings.
And to think I voted yes on the spare the rod, spoil the child thing.
I just wanted every kid to be spoiled at least once in a while, you know, get treated to ice cream rather than beatings with a rod.
Yep, agreed.
Anyways, okay, that's our show, everybody. We'll join us next week, where I'll finally be giving the review for the book,
Almost Done.
Atheist Spirituality. I am about 10 pages into it.
10 pages into it? No,
10 pages from being done.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I didn't do it this time is because there's a particular aspect of it that I want to kind of explore a little bit further myself. So I will talk about it and make my recommendation on the book.
And hopefully I'll get to read it too. It all just depends on if Jake will let me read it on the toilet. Because he has this strange no reading my books on the toilet.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
Well, here's the thing. Look at it like this.
Would read an entire book in a toilet? How long do you spend in there, man?
I spend about 30 minutes. It's like my Fortress of Solitude.
God damn, you porcelain fortress of solitude?
It's comforting and nice in there. It's like
do you talk to your poo?
You know, considering all of the bombardment that we get on a daily basis, being able to lock yourself in a room and just sit there with your pants off and just let all of your natural functions occur as they will is a very relaxing thing.
I just don't see it that way. When I go to the bathroom, I just try to push that shit out and get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the bathroom. I find it confining and... You know, it's that porcelain white everywhere. Freaks the hell out of me.
Man, I wonder what Freud would say about that.
Probably a lot of bullshit.